It's Spoiler in Time, folks, the show where all the hard work we do figuring out this crazy world of cord cutting on our other show, Cord Killers, pays off because we get to watch some amazing stuff and talk about it here. This week, we'll be talking about episode 1 of season 2 of The Office UK. We'll be talking about season 8, episode 2 of Game of Thrones. We'll be checking in with Brian's catch up on the HBO series Barry, episodes 5 and 6 of season 1. I'm Tom Merritt. And he is the aforementioned Brian Brushwood.
Heck yeah. But most importantly, we got to get things started by finding out how our butts are getting kicked in the summer movie draft.
All right, Brian. I just had to throw this Deadline story in here. Avengers Endgame pre-sales estimated at $120 million, a $300 million domestic opening in play. In other words, they've already sold $120 million worth of tickets. They think opening weekend might end up at $300 million.
I would be okay with Frog Pants running away with this. I don't now that I know that I'm screwed, I would kind of almost rather see that.
I may or may not have been speaking to Commissioner Eileen Rivera this weekend about this very topic. And we looked at Captain Marvel at $400 million, Toy Story 4 and It Chapter 2, and figure Team John Trekker makes at least a million, probably 1.1, 1.2.
A billion.
You imagine a combination of Endgame and Longshot, even with a $300 million opening weekend, making $1 million?
A billion.
A billion. Thank you. You're right.
The cool number.
No, you're right. Okay, that's off the table. That's not going to happen.
It's just like I'm looking at my own lineup here and I'm like, all right, John Wick Chapter 3, Aladdin, Dark Phoenix, The Lion King. They basically all have to make an average of $300 million for me to have a chance, which is not impossible, but it may not be exactly likely.
Yeah. All right. So. Hey, can we talk real quick? I don't think we talked about the spoilerly leak of Avengers. I must admit to my delight that I haven't, and I hesitate to even say this for fear that people are going to make a project out of it. But like, I expected more people trying to be trollish about putting out spoilers for Endgame.
And now closing the chat room.
Okay, well, see, what it is is people do it based on Twitter, right? They look up Twitter, people using the hashtags, using specific keywords. You're not tweeting about Game of Thrones, or not Game of Thrones, Avengers.
Right.
So why would anybody, you're not going to get swept up in
fair
that.
Fair enough. I guess what I'm hoping is that it's an indication that in general, there's not much joy to be found in doing that, but I think
it is still happening. I mean, just
there it is in the chat. Thanos killed Dumbledore.
It's done. Oh man, I didn't even know Dumbledore was gonna be in Endgame.
He took him like that.
Kisses Thanos. There it is.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. I don't really want to talk about it. Because that just feels like it's giving people more other people opportunities to talk about it more or spoil other people. But
well,
yeah,
I guess what I'm trying to express is I felt some warm fuzzies for if not the internet as a whole, at the very least for our corner of the internet, because bunch of people. The only social media things I've gotten are people reaching out to warn me that inclement weather was approaching and take care of yourself so that you can enjoy this piece of art. And I think that's pretty cool.
Nice. Yeah. Coming out next week is this little movie for Frog Pants, Avengers Endgame, followed by their movie Long Shot and Team Hammerson's Ugly Dolls the week after. I mean, really not much else to say. Curse of La Llorona did $26.3 million for Team Hammerson, though. Not bad.
A very good buy at $6.
Yeah.
Better than almost as good as Shazam.
It's no us at $21.2 million per dollar spent for the Beerists.
Holy cow. Yeah, no. Well done.
All right. Let's move on to Barry. So you watched a couple more episodes. What are you thinking?
Yeah, to be clear, when I resumed today, I was like halfway through episode 4 and then I ended up like halfway through episode 6. Tom, you're I understand that you were worried that that there was not enough there for me to latch on to. Very much. Yes, the acting and hooray for actors stuff is in there. But
to be clear, that was my worry was that that's not going away. And I don't think it ever goes away.
That's fine. It will just always be one of my lesser favorite parts of the show. But right now, the star of the show is the fatal attraction between the police detective and Barry Zuckerkorn. It's amazing that his dating game is awful and adorable. And his insanity of, like, at some point he casually says, "Hey, man, I'm a man of 47 years old. I understand." And it's like he's so old school Hollywood where he's, I loved it. I loved everything about it. And I loved the fact that we hit that moment where she's willing to stop the investigation so that they could actually be an item. I also love the weirdness of Barry meeting up with the dipstick Marine guy and realizing, oh wait, there's an opportunity for me to get out of all of this in the middle of it. It's getting much better, much faster than I dared hope.
What do you think of the Chechens? That's the only part I haven't heard you mention that I'm interested in.
I do. I'm a sucker for the dichotomy of dad life and work life and, you know, him trying to do all that at the same time. It's a bit cartoonish in general. And when I look to that side of the story, it's very hard to even really see much of that when you have the white hot supernova of Stephen Root's performance. Like, he just chews up all the scenery on all that. His character's more interesting. His performance is more interesting. But I'm sure all of that grows. But at this point, I just got to the part where they encounter the Chechen and our detective shoots him in the chest, and they have to do some poking around. They end up finding the dirty money from the previous hit. And so all of a sudden you could tell that an ever increasingly large spotlight is going to be shining on the Fonz's acting school.
Henry Winkler is freaking amazing throughout this entire thing, even into season two. Spoiler alert, he's still amazing. So I like this. I like this checking in on Barry. This is pretty fun. I can't wait for you to get to caught up so we can start watching them together. Meanwhile, something we did watch together and even started texting about last night was Game of Thrones episode two, which I both agree with. There's several camps out there about this episode. And I know, Brian, and I'm not going to speak for you, but I know you're kind of in the camp of like, come on, let's have stuff happen, because we talked about that last week. I both agree, but I also kind of love the tension building. And I'm letting myself admire that part of it of like, yeah, not much happened, but there's character here. We're not learning anything new about the characters, but we're getting to spend time with them. And there's story. And I went back and rewatched it. I feel like every scene is motivated. Every scene is setting something up. Every scene is at least solidifying something that maybe we already knew, but let's remind you of it and let's make it more solid. Agree or disagree?
It depends on how you contextualize it. If you are looking at this, so one of the most eye-opening experiences I think we've ever had in the history of the show was realizing how different the experience of binge-watching a show is versus week-to-week. In general, I think it's fair to say that we are kind of universally frustrated with the pacing on Westworld, and we're constantly, I don't want to say hate-watching, but frustrated watching week-to-week, and yet, for the vast majority of everybody who ever consumes that, and we talked about this with Lost because Bryce is binging through Lost as well, the vast majority of people are going to experience it as a binged experience. If I think about this last season as we just watched the second hour of a 10-hour movie, then sure, have a very tantric 2-hour ramp up for the 10-hour thrill ride that we're about to experience. However, I don't live in that reality. I live in the reality where some people say, here's this week's episode. And I made a lot of excuses last week for the table setting, for the getting ready to get ready of everything. And this week, as Bryce rightly pointed out in the Weird Things podcast, we were explicitly promised stuff happening.
That preview for this week's episode had fight footage in it. I swear it had some sort of fight footage in it, and that
it was the training. Ooh. It was the training that Brienne was doing. Yeah,
and I'm just gonna say this: the preview for next week has no fight footage in it, which is also
well,
we know that
know
one's the
next
battle.
Week
we
is
know that's
the
battle.
Largest battle ever filmed for television.
Right.
It is a longer battle than Helm's Deep in the second Lord of the Rings movie. So you will not be disappointed if you're looking for battle footage next week.
That's true.
Yes. However, we are not at
we're
next
not there
week.
Yet.
We have to evaluate this episode for what it was. Well, and what it was, yes, Tom, if I'm understanding what you texted me correctly, it was our last night of peaceful sleep next to characters that we loved for a long time.
Oh, it was not peaceful sleep. Not at all.
Whatever. No. Cozying up to, holding
no,
tight.
No, there's nothing cozy. This is the unsteady boredom prior to a battle and how you deal with those nerves.
The calm
and
before the
not,
I
you.
Did not.
That's
it,
fine.
If that is what you think they were headed for, I would say it failed spectacularly in that because.
Oh, I disagree entirely.
I
think your discomfort, in some ways, at least informs my opinion that they succeeded, and I don't think you enjoyed it. I'm not trying to argue that you loved it, but. This is what it. This felt like what it's like the night before a battle to me. I felt like this was right.
I don't think any of us needed that Arya scene. Arya is made of rage and revenge, and to inject some Oogie wannabe soft moments, number one, undercuts Arya's character. Number two, I don't want to watch my little sister doing that. Number two, beyond that, we learned nothing. We learned that Brienne wanted to be a knight. Duh. We learned that Tormund wants Brienne. Duh. We learned that Arya is tough. Duh.
But I think we got two important things. I think we got two important interactions out of that whole thing, which is not a lot, but it's more than zero, right? We got Dany finding out about Jon being a Targaryen, which she visibly was not interested in. She hates that idea and definitely sees him as an obstacle now.
Yeah, in which case I would have liked to have seen a fight about that or literally anything.
Yeah, both of these moments got interrupted. And then the other one was Sansa and Daenerys talking, which also let Daenerys know that Sansa was going to make trouble if they win this battle, right?
No, this is all brilliant setup, in my opinion. And I'm probably horribly wrong. Good. I'm probably naive, and I'm seeing this through rose-colored glasses. I will fully admit that ahead of time. But I didn't want to see them have the fight now. I want to see them interrupted by this task they have to do. I want to see Daenerys torn apart between her budding love for Jon and her lust for the throne. And the fact that she has already said, I am not fighting my war. I'm fighting his war. And now he wants my throne too? Mm-hmm. Like, put against the fact that she does think Jon is an honorable man and not get resolution on that, not see a fight between them because the White Walkers are coming. I want to see her and Sansa look like they're about to come to a resolution, and yet Sansa show that, you know what, I've learned to be made of steel, and I'm not gonna pick a fight with you, but I'm gonna state very clearly, this is the problem. You're trying to make nice with me, but can you get past this problem? And have that interrupted, because guess what? White Walkers are coming. And that is why we're going to have the biggest battle scene ever next week. And whatever happens with the White Walkers, we're gonna have three more episodes of dealing with all of this stuff that has been left hanging beforehand, plus dealing with whatever traumatic events are gonna come out of that battle, which you know is going to kill people.
Mm. Yeah,
you know, we know next week's episode is going to be super long. It's going to be like 90 minutes is my understanding. Yeah. And so if what the purpose of episodes 1 and 2 is like, hey, imagine you are seeing the third Lord of the Rings movie next week. And in lieu of the first two movies, we had to do these two episodes.
Imagine we took the song from Pippin in the third movie and put it in the first movie instead.
But it's like, I think they are really building up the potential energy in these two episodes so that everything in next week's episode can feel fully formed. I was really excited for the battle to happen, but also thinking about it last night, I was like, well, the battles are impressive in this show, But also, I don't know that I want 90 minutes of just the battles that they've shown so far. I would like something that is more informed by a lot of setup and reminders of all the, you know, everyone's dynamics. So maybe this is for the better for next week. Maybe this is all just eating our vegetables and getting ready.
Here's an alternate take on this. Sure. If we are meant to feel more excitement for the battle, I feel like I'm most excited for the battles where I know the plan so that mm-hmm. I can be either happy or sad as I watch the plan either unfold the right way or the wrong way.
Sure.
They very intentionally are hiding the plan from us.
They
had a scene that depicted a board and showed a bunch of little figurines, and they said, and then we'll do the fight. But it's like, that's not the type of storytelling.
The way we win this battle is to kill the Night King. We will lure the Night King into the Weirwood, and that is how we win this battle. And everything else is just buying us time to lure the Night King to Bran and kill the Night King.
Correct.
That's the plan.
And who do we know is going to do which part of that plan?
We know Theon's going to kill Bran.
Turns out he's still loyal. He's like, I want
Greek.
That.
By the way, I want that.
Guess what? We know Theon's going to guard Bran. And we know that the dragons are going to be the ones to go after the Night King. So I assume that means Dany and Jon riding the dragons.
Yeah.
And then everyone else is on the ground protecting the fort.
I guess that was suitably explained.
I mean, it isn't a heist. It's definitely not like a heist.
I think that's what I wanted more of. Is sort of like, what if blank? What if this? What if that? But instead, it's like, these are the three things that will be in next episode.
I feel like that's hard with White Walkers to be like, you know, there's no heist. It's kill them with dragon glass or get killed and become one of them. Like, there's not a whole lot of strategic options with them.
Did you guys, it seemed like from our text exchange that both of you guys were more moved than I was with the knighting of Ser Brienne.
It was very sweet.
Yeah.
It was very sweet.
And I thought it was sweet. I also thought that this is the kind of thing you do when you're whistling in the dark the night before a battle, right? You go, hey, you know what? There's a principle that any knight can knight anybody else. And I know that I'm barely a knight right now since every queen hates me and wants me dead, but what the hell? Get over here, Brienne. Let me knight you. Yeah, this will make you feel good. And it's a symbolic moment.
Yeah. Was it too sappy or?
No. It just lacked. I wanted it to be more rooted in the reality of the story that they had established. And what they had established was a heavily patriarchal society where either A, no female had ever been a knight before, in which case you have to explain to me, hey, this is, you know, fairly symbolic right now, but if we win, then your name will be recorded in all the annals of history as the first female knight, whatever. Then I could feel like this is a momentous and significant thing. They're bucking a lifelong trend. Mm-hmm. If the alternate is any knight can just knight anybody else, then alternately explain to me why nobody has ever knighted a female up until this time.
Because it would never be tolerated. That it's yes, every knight can make another knight. That's actually very well established in Game of Thrones canon. It's actually pulled from medieval history as well. And if that was the case, why in medieval history didn't any knight ever knight a woman? Because it just wasn't done. Wasn't thought of.
See, that is a realistic poor explanation.
That's history. Okay, like, that is actual history.
No,
that's like legitimately why no female knights existed in medieval Europe, because you know what? Any knight can make another knight, but you're not going to make a female knight. I mean, we don't even need a rule about it. That's just obvious. No one will do it. No one will recognize it. It's just the way the world is.
What you're saying is exactly what I felt, and they did nothing to convince me of otherwise. I don't recognize it. That's the problem. What I'm saying is
but that's what makes it so poignant to me.
No, that's what made it pointless.
We know
that's what
that made it this pointless. Is not done. But Jaime is doing it right now, and that is so meaningful to Brienne because she's like, you know what? Maybe this doesn't mean anything outside of these walls right now, but the fact that you're doing it is...
Then say that! Have dialogue that says that.
Say it. That would be telling, not showing. They showed you all of those emotions in the
series has built up all of the reasoning behind this.
You You have
I didn't need to be told. I'll put it that way.
Okay. All right.
Well, I think in your first, you laid out two possibilities of why this happened, right? And I think the first one is exactly right, that this is the end days and that this is a pre-war story. This is the type of story that would exist in Game of Thrones lore. And so I don't see, like,
so
the
here's
wild
what, here's
idea
what it
that,
felt
like
to me.
Oh,
it
legendarily, it felt to me like, before the war, we knighted this
It felt like the equivalent of, oh, man, why not? Let's just get married. I'm going to take a pop top off of this can. And I'm going to put it on your finger. Now, this doesn't mean anything right now, but if I make it back from this battle, then this means something, right? It gives context, right? It's an acknowledgement that this doesn't mean anything in and of itself. And what Tom is saying is, no, it means something. They're now married because he put a pop top can on her. And it's like, you have to frame it. If you want me to feel it, you have to either address and dismiss the fact that, well, that's not what a wedding is. Or you need to say, yes, it's not a wedding, but it will be once we come out the other side of this.
But like that, even in that metaphor, this was a wedding, all right? Like, I mean, this was the real thing.
I mean, yeah, he took a pop top off a can and put it on her finger,
which
but,
is what she wanted, right? She wanted to be a knight.
No, she wants to be an actual knight,
which
not
she
to
is.
Have a pop.
You're gonna tell me that the thing that they spent the
Tom
whole scene
just to... explained that it doesn't count if you do that.
No, that's
I
not what he
say
said.
It doesn't count. I said it probably won't be accepted.
Right.
It's a thing that you can do, but no one will accept it. We don't know. It's I just think it's more complex and nuanced than you're saying, and I think I don't need them to explain that to me. I get it.
Okay. Well then I just required more stakes. I needed more reinforcement of the significance of this in terms of either I needed to learn more about the story, the backstory of the world, or the inner story of what was happening to them both emotionally in that moment. And I feel like I was left sort of in the middle, like, wait, so is this something that's never happened before?
Yes.
I don't believe
and
that.
It may or may not matter tomorrow or not, but to me, that's not even the point.
In
it's
all of
a
the hundreds of thousands of knights that came before, nobody
what
knighted a woman.
Is
but
the
also,
gesture.
Right.
What
I,
matters was that through this long history of Brienne and Jaime reconciling his horribleness and her honor and becoming friends, he decided to make the gesture of giving her her wish. Granted, it may be just a pop top, but it didn't matter. In that moment, what mattered is that he was willing to do it, go through the motions, have this kind of smattering of applause from the people there. And it was meaningful to her. And that's important.
Because you actually bring up a good point.
It was an entirely emotional scene. It was not a rational scene.
Right. I think you're arguing about procedure, and I think Tom's arguing about the emotion of
it. And actually, I think both of you guys have unlocked a different thing that I was feeling. I feel like Jaime at this point is bankrupt and lacks the moral or emotional authority to like he is at his lowest, and he knows he's a piece of garbage with a piece of garbage history, mm-hmm. and to have the garbage man be the one to bless this union, I was like, I need something besides the garbage man putting a pop top on a finger.
But the reason it's appropriate is because Brienne is the one who stood up for the garbage man and said he's not a garbage man earlier in the episode.
Okay, all right.
His title,
that
his lineage,
track.
Like,
yeah, okay.
Look, he might be the dirtiest pig, but he's a pig nonetheless.
You're right. And to be honest, I don't really care if there's any outside authority blessing this union.
Because humanity might not exist.
All I care is what she believes. Sure. And maybe that's what I need a little more of, is maybe just a line of dialogue of her saying, like, all I care about is you or your opinion. You know, could I have made it? And then mm-hmm. he says, mm-hmm. well, not only have you, could you? You did.
Let me show you.
Right. Yeah, I think that would have been something I could have anchored yeah. my understanding of her mm-hmm. position on.
Okay. Gotcha. That was fun, actually. I like working that out.
Hey, here is something that I felt like was an unfinished scene. Jaime and Bran talking. That felt like one half of a conversation, and Bran being intentionally not talkative to, I don't know, it felt like they knew that the first episode of the season ended with this big, like, pull my neckline because this is an awkward moment. And then they talked it out and nothing came of it. It fizzled. It fizzled this thing that they had set up the tension at the very end of the last episode for.
Well, we talked about that last week. I thought that was a dumb way to end the episode. And then you mentioned that it was supposed to be like a parallel to the very first episode.
Sure.
I think they did that in service of the structure of the first episode. And yes, it didn't pay off because they, in terms of story in this episode, because they weren't serving story. They were serving structure when they set up the tension.
Well, and character, I you know, character not building, but character exposition. I don't know. I liked Caddy Bran. I know not everyone will, but I liked when Bran was like, "The things we do for love, am I right?" And Jamie looking like, "Oh crap, you hold my future." And so that tied in very well for me to Jamie come back and like, "Hey man, why aren't you? You're throwing me to the wolves because you literally could have me thrown to literal wolves." And Bran saying, "Yeah, but if you hadn't done that, I wouldn't be who I am. You wouldn't be who you are. And I'm also the three-eyed raven, and I don't always explain everything. So peace out. We'll see tomorrow what that all means." And I'm okay with that because I think we will. I think this is part two of a three-part conversation.
Mm, okay.
So who lives next week? I threw my hat over the wall.
That's a more complex question than who lives, right? Because people who live next week won't necessarily live to the end of this season, but...
Correct.
first of all, we can all agree that it was pretty damn obvious that everybody going to the crypt is probably going to die, with the exception of maybe Tyrion getting out of there, which, because I think we'll need him for more things later. But you don't... When an army of the undead that Jon Snow has seen the Night King bring dead people up with the wave of his hand, you don't hide people next to a bunch of other dead people.
I wasn't thinking of that.
Oh, God. That's all I kept thinking when they kept like, "Oh, but you'll be safe in the crypt." I'm like, that is the stupidest place to hide people.
Yeah.
When you have a guy who can raise armies from the dead.
I feel like there was a clue in what a non-confrontation there was between Jon Snow and Daenerys. I feel like almost certainly Jon Snow dies this next episode, and that she's pregnant. Even though she was told she will never bear another child, she discovers she's pregnant with the next iteration of the Targaryen line.
I actually become less satisfied with the conversation that I said I was satisfied earlier if he dies. Because to me, the whole point of this is to set up a running battle for the last three episodes between their feelings and her ambition. And if he dies, that storyline doesn't exist.
But then that gives Sansa her motivation to go against Daenerys.
But Sansa isn't the heir to the throne. Jon is.
Right, but it's her family, right? And she wants to keep the North independent.
I mean, if Jon's dead, there's no credible threat to Daenerys' claim to the throne. There's just a fight over the throne of King of the North.
Is it worth even considering the possibility that
Daenerys dies?
That everybody who wants the throne dies and that Tyrion, you know, says let's make a democracy. Not tomorrow, but I mean, like, is it possible that nobody who wants the throne gets it?
Oh,
and not even a reluctant Jon Snow takes the throne.
Yeah, no, I think by the end of the series, absolutely, that's a possibility. I think we need Daenerys and Jon Snow to live through the battle in order to have the fight for the throne become the next fight Daenerys, Jon, and Cersei.
I think if Daenerys doesn't let Jon die during the battle, let some, like, "I'm watching you and I could be saving you, but I'm definitely not going to be doing that," I think they definitely have a moment like that where he sees her wavering on whether to actually help him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, "Ooh, somebody wants the throne a little bit more than the bone."
That's definitely a possibility.
can we talk about how unbelievably
cue
horny
that tweet up now. If that moment happens, just I want everybody to tweet out, "Looks like somebody wants the throne more than the bone."
can we just very quickly, last night's episode was incredibly horny.
It's the night before everybody's going to die. Everybody keeps saying, like, "We're all going to die tomorrow, right?" Like,
yeah.
That's how people act.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't say this from experience.
I was expecting more of a rager, though. I think that was kind of a mismatch watching the episode. Like, I was kind
of
expecting
it would have been good to have a rager element, right? Because everybody deals with it differently. So Ari is the one who's like, you know what? I might die tomorrow. Let's bone. And then all the people by the fire are the people who are like, let's just get drunk because tomorrow we die. Where was the like, let's just like throw the all caution to the wind, rager. Yeah,
and especially of all people, I would expect Tormund to just be, you know, punching anyone who wants to get punched. You know, I wanted it to feel a little bit.
You should have punched Jamie, really.
There's no lack. There's no amount. Yes, there should have been so much more punching in this episode. Full stop.
Yeah, probably should have been. I did like that he brought his own milk drink and then slobbered it all down his throat. Front.
The Giant's Bane story was so
it was so awkward. I mean, it was, there were some beautiful beats of being at a party, right? Yeah. The moment where Arya's like, I'm not going to hang out with you. Oh, really? You, Beric Dondarrion? Great. Okay, you know what? I wanted to talk to the Hound, but not that bad. And the sort of like, oh, it's me and my friends cuddled up by the fire. This is going to be fun. Oh, hey, Tormund. Yeah, I guess you're here too. Okay, fine. Like, that really rang true to me.
All of the children will die next week.
Yeah?
They have spent the past two episodes showing us a lot of young children who want to die for their country, their kingdom, and all of them will do so.
To like the little girl who is begging for bread. I didn't want to. My initial reaction was to roll my eyes. I'm like, no, this is fine. Let it in, you know, enjoy the moment. It's the Davos Seaworth night. You know, you like him. She's totally going to die next week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I am convinced that, okay. So instead of everybody's playing the Deadpool, let's play the live pool. Davos absolutely 100% lives. Mark that on my, I set my watch and warrant by it. Also Tormund. Everyone else, definitely Dany, and that's it.
I think I will say Dany and John have to be safe because
I believe John.
How I think the last three episodes are going to play. I don't think you have a strong story without both of those people chasing Cersei down the.
Well, especially because they already killed John once. You're right. I think it's unlikely that
I think Arya could go.
Yes, Arya will definitely go. And I think Sansa could
Sansa will stick around.
Really?
I feel like there's a lot more Sansa that could
because she's got the North independence.
Right.
Thing.
She's the only good guy that carries the spirit of Littlefinger, the Machiavellian.
Tormund will die trying to save Brienne. And then Brienne will also die.
No, Jaime dies. Jaime dies for sure.
Jamie sacrifices himself for the greater good. I will add this to my Arya prediction. We are going to see our heroes not only die, but then turned into whites.
Yes.
To fight for the other side. And I believe Arya will be the, she will be, what's the name? Viserion? Is that the dragon? She will be that for people.
Right. Oh, do you think she rides Viserion or the king does, right?
Yeah, the Night King rides Viserion.
Yeah.
Do we think, okay. This okay. How okay.
Man, how long has it been since we had a TV show that we got to talk about this one? This is great.
We haven't even talked about this. Are they going to win next week? Because I think that there is a very, very strong chance that they lose. A small a one horse carriage rides away to King's Landing and has to like team up with Cersei and her army.
Yes. I would give an even money bet. Yes, I agree. They will be overrun.
They will definitely be overrun. Be more than a one horse carriage, but I think the stragglers will flee south to plead with Cersei saying, you have the Golden Company. You have to use them to defeat. We've weakened them, but we haven't beaten them. And if you don't use the Golden Company to beat them, we all die.
New side bet. Jackie Hearn in the chat saying the battle will last two episodes.
I believe we've been told it will last one episode.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I believe that is known Khaleesi.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean there can't be a second battle with the King's Landing.
Asha Greyjoy. I mean, sorry. What's her name? Yara Greyjoy?
Yeah.
She said, I've got the Iron Islands in case Daenerys needs to go there. So I think our company may get split. Some of them escape to the Iron Islands and some of them flee south.
Yeah. Okay. Grey Worm dies.
Yeah, Grey Worm dies, especially because we had a little nice, like, let's plan for the future.
You know, right, as I think about it, like, I don't feel like there would be an emotional gut punch with Jon Snow dying. But if I remember last week we talked about, like, if my goal as a producer is to get maximum emotional twist, I think Tyrion dies.
That would be maximum emotional twist. I think you're right.
Because
and
we
would die
believe
in the
it.
Crypt, saving the little girl.
Yep.
Do you think both Jaime and Tyrion die?
No.
Both of the Lannister boys die?
It's one of them definitely does. And now that I'm thinking through, yes, Jaime does have to face Cersei. Mm-hmm. I think the one that'll hurt us all the most in the heart is Tyrion dying, which is why I'm certain Tyrion will die.
The only objection I could think of to that is they made a big deal of giving Bran the crossbow that Tyrion used to kill his dad. And if Tyrion dies, not at the hands of crossbow.
That's why the Night King is holding Tyrion and Bran has the crossbow and he says,
and Tyrion says,
do
kill
it.
Me.
Yes. And then he pulls the trigger,
like
bloop. And then he gets the Night King. Maybe the Night King's not dead, but he's injured or some like that. That's gotta be what it is. That's maximum heartbreak.
That's, and
the
kills.
Other,
all right.
The other case for Jaime also needing to live is that I don't think anyone else is going to care about Cersei's pregnancy,
except for Jaime. That's a good point,
because I did not realize when we were talking last week that Cersei was previously pregnant, or they had said she was pregnant in the last season. I just remembered the guy that she banged being like,
I'm gonna put a baby in there.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, I already got one.
Right. Ooh. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Amend my prediction. Lock me in for Tyrion. So long, right. T-Dog.
So if this is any sort of signal, the Reddit Game of Thrones throne pool is only asking who wins the Iron Throne, which sets up that one person out of the cast is going to win. Right. Baby. Now, episode 2, who do you think wins?
I am increasingly in love with the idea that nobody who wants it gets it.
So Baby gets the throne.
They have Jon, Dany, Tyrion, Jaime, Cersei, Arya, Sansa, Bran, the Night King, Lyanna, Gendry, Theon, Euron, Sam, or Missandei.
Nobody. Lyanna? The only winning move is not to play. That's all of this has secretly been war games, playing tic tac toe.
I think Dany Baby with Tyrion as regent in a constitutional monarchy.
Actually, that plays.
Yeah.
That place, and make it a ceremonial title. I could see some moving speech about, like, don't you see, it's not the throne that's evil, it's the perception
it's
of
the
power.
It's the game.
Exactly. It's like, yes, have a ceremonial king,
also,
but the power should
be... You know who's immune from death is Samwell Tarly.
Why is that?
Because we are... This may not be 100% certain, but we're almost 100% certain that he is the person telling the Song of Ice and Fire. And they've dropped a million hints of, like, I think someone needs to tell the story, and I'm the only one who's researched the story, and I'm the only one who knows the story. Like, so I think Sam is the only one who's immune.
Oh,
interesting.
That is pretty good. Well, and so then we have Sam.
He survives, but
he's
I don't
the master.
I don't, he's like a win. Chancellor of.
He's the maester. Yeah. The chancellor. Right. Yeah.
Oh. And then meanwhile, you know, you got his kid, the wildling kid, running around with the young
his little Gilly-weed.
Yeah.
Though I almost wonder if that role couldn't be filled by Bran. I mean, granted, Bran is much more important.
Raven. He dies.
Oh.
Although he wouldn't see it that way. Because all time exists at the same time.
Good point.
Like NBD.
I think I'm going to say out of this list here, I think it's Jon. I don't know.
I think
Jon definitely will die. But
it's got to be nobody.
Now, I think this is not like nobody as in no choice. I think this is the people of no faces. The no face folk.
A faceless man gets the throne?
There's a sigil next to the word nobody here, which makes me think it's not...
All right.
Not a person.
I did like the little Arya thing where she's like, I've seen death. It has many faces. I look forward to seeing this one. Also means she's gonna die. Oh, and what can you be a faceless, a white, where you can impersonate other people?
Ooh, no, no, no. Hold on, hold on. What if she impersonates a white? What if that's how they take out the Night King? Is there's some, it's me, your dead lieutenant that you trust.
That's so crazy. It's just my work.
Standing next to you. Ha ha.
Oh, I was Arya the whole time. Dragon glass. My special staff.
Right. Oh, that's right. That's why. Remember my secret gizmo from the first episode? I made it into a mask of a zombie.
Yeah. Okay. I don't remember this. The last shot of the episode, the two long white haired characters with the White Walkers, are those just like the Ice King?
Yeah, I think those are just those are white dead people. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure.
They're the first people we saw in episode one.
Oh, okay.
We never saw the Night King in episode one, but episode one, we saw the long hair white horse riders.
I see. I saw that shot and I was like, there are two Night Kings? What the hell?
Yeah.
But it's he's bald.
Night King has short hair.
Yeah, luckily. He's got the horns and all. Though they kind of look like Targaryens with the long, thin white hair.
I mean, don't read too much into that.
Yeah. No.
Okay.
They predate Targaryens.
They used to date Targaryens.
They were Targaryens before Targaryens. Okay. All right. That's Game of Thrones. We will talk quite a bit more about it next week. I have a feeling. We finish off with The Office Series 2's premiere. It's the 7th episode of The Office, Season 2, Episode 1. I'll be honest, Brian. I don't really like this episode.
Oh, I loved it. It was really? It was the breath of fresh air that I was expecting. Remember last week I said, second seasons tend to be better than the first. You could tell that they were playing specific games that they weren't playing before. The bad parts or the poorly executed parts were Tim continues to wildly swing from interested in Dawn to not interested at all to back to like that ending where he's full on groping her at the office was really weird. But
groping Dawn or groping the other girl?
Dawn. Yeah. Remember at the end he gets pushed up against the wall by Dawn's fiance.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you don't remember that? He's like full on like dancing with her in the office after playing hard to get. Like the whole episode, he's irrationally hostile to her. And then he's like, okay, let's make fun of Gareth. And then suddenly he's pawing at her and dancing with her. And then her fiance comes up and shoves him against the wall. And it's like, all of that was too far to one side, too far to the other. None of it made sense for me. The star of the show is exploring the nature of comedy writing and what is transgressive and for what reason, and hearing the bizarre defenses, like the misunderstanding, like, well, is it a racist joke? I don't know. And it's like, wait, oh, but it wasn't the racism, it was the sex. Oh, well, we can fix the joke by making it sexual in this way. And then doubling down. I don't know. I really enjoyed all of that. And I felt like this is what the heart of this show is.
I was bored by all of that.
Oh, my God.
Okay, we get it. David Brent. Uh-huh. He makes things uncomfortable. He misreads the room. Like, do you have to beat me over the head over and over with it? Right. Like, show me something new. I already know this about David Brent.
Oh, no. Yeah, I mean, you're right. If in terms of learning about the character, but as a narrative construct that allows us to explore, like, okay, we all know it was wrong to tell that joke, but why was it wrong? Was it wrong because it was racist? Well, it can't be racist because this person of color thought it was funny. You're like, oh, okay, but
no, I get all that. I was just bored by it. I'm like, okay, yeah, same shtick, got it. Yeah, we've done it. It's just not enjoying that shtick as much as you did. Meant that I was just like, all right. Can we get to the next thing?
Huh. Hey, well, I liked it quite a bit.
Yeah, well, that's why we're two different people instead of the same person. I really did. I really just did not like this episode, which is hilarious that you liked it so much. But I think I see why. And it's not that those jokes are bad or wrong or didn't work. I was just like, not in the mood for him, I guess.
Well, and also it's one of the meatier. It's not often you get a little bit of philosophy in a light primetime sitcom, but I feel like they got close enough to it that I took a moment to think about, like, okay, what is the line and why did it cross it and that stuff, which I enjoyed.
Gotcha. All right. Well, next week, Appraisals, which is like all of the episodes in Series 2, directed by and written by Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant, which actually might be true of all Season 1 as well. I think it is.
Is so. Stephen Merchant one of the actors in The Office?
No.
Okay.
I think he may enter in as a bit part later in the series, if I recall, but he is, yeah, he does not play a part in anything we've seen.
Yeah, it's a... by the way, since I was rewatching Logan, he's great in Logan.
Yeah, he was great in The Good Place too.
Wait, who is he in The Good Place?
He was the accountant in the.
he's the head accountant. Oh my God, you're so right. Yeah.
In the office.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah. All right, folks, thank you so much for joining us. Of course, those who support us on Patreon get so much cool things like After Talk, and you also get these episodes early, so I hope you're enjoying your early look at it. Patrons at patreon.com/cordkillers. We'll be back to talk about the big battle and more next week. See you then.
Bob hopes you have enjoyed this program.